is knowing. Crow!
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is going to be a one-hour episode. Jason Lindgren is with me and Athan Kamenti. This will probably be episode 570.5. We're going to talk about the sky clock between now and the high point of the sun in June, or the summer solstice. As everyone's aware, there's an eclipse coming. There's actually a lot of claims around that eclipse from the five visible planets, supposedly a couple that you need a scope to see. But the real big thing is this comet. And the problem with covering comets is the media always misrepresents them. They try to blow them up and make them bigger than they are, more visible than they are. But they are claiming that this comet, which is named Pons Brook, named in 1800s, they're calling it the Devil Comet. Their claim is that it might be visible during the totality of the eclipse along with the other planets, which is a pretty big deal. I don't recall in my lifetime, at least when I was old enough to pay attention to eclipses, anything like this. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a beautiful good morning.
It is, man. I'm getting the scope out today and trying to do first light. So I'm excited about that. Welcome, Athan.
Hey, guys. Great to be back on.
So how have you been since last time we caught up with you?
Oh, not too bad. Just, you know, working a lot and taking as much time off as I can when I can.
That's the way to do it. So we're here in March and I haven't checked for sure, but I mark an equinox as an equal day and night. And I know there's other ways you could define it, but to me, the words that describe it imply that that's actually what it is. The idea is equilibrium and balance. So to me, when night and light are balanced, that's an equinox. So for me, I think it's going to be on the 17th. I haven't checked. It's typically lines right up with St. Patrick's Day, who actually stands in for this event in the Catholic Church. But what would you bring up? Are there any events that catch your eye as we come into the so-called equinox?
Yeah, and some big ones that we've been talking about for some time, actually, the past couple of times I've been on, actually. So yeah, obviously we have the eclipses, and you mentioned that during our talk before this. So that's on March 25th is the next one. So that's kind of, you know, preluding these events, but that's March 25th. And then we have the other one on April 8th. And what's really unique about this time is that Jupiter and Uranus are going to conjoin. Okay. And so this being two outer planets, again, like we've talked about before, is more of a rare occurrence. Now, it's not that rare with Jupiter. He would be the fastest of the slow movers, but still. But what's so significant about it is not only this conjunction, but that they're both conjoining at the same time that they entered Taurus. And the fact that Uranus is entering Taurus is significant, as of course, that only happens once every roughly 84, 85 years. So this is coupled with Pluto, who's just now starting to enter into Capricorn. We talked about this last time in terms of those changes to the systems and structures. So that's starting really a 20-year process of a lot of the transformations in regards to governments, political systems, economic systems. And the last time this happened was during the late 1700s. And exactly where Pluto is now is exactly where Pluto was in 1776, which was, as many know, the birth of the United States. And what really, I would say, gave birth to the ideas of freedom and individual autonomy to the rest of the world. And that's where we went from monarchy to more democratic and republic forms of government. So major time of changes there, obviously, with the structures. And as you can see, it took time. So it didn't all happen at the same time, obviously. But over the course of the next 20 years, you know, I'm expecting really a new paradigm in terms of these changes, the same way from going from monarchy to democratic and republic governments did in the late 1700s. So big time. And then, of course, the Taurus, Uranus and Jupiter going into Taurus is a big deal, too, which I'm seeing is a lot of changes with the financial side of things.
Well, it's interesting, you know, Taurus is a bull, and the old word for money is bullion, which has bull and lion in it. Clearly, people were paying attention to the sky clock. But to get back to the point, I've heard people who pay attention to the sky make the claim that we've been having constraining energies for some time, which has contributed to this kind of world takeover we see. And I've heard them recently say that those energies are starting to go the other way, become more expansive. Do you agree with that idea?
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I think there's already been a big change just this past year, 2 years, in regards to things peaking out in the context of maybe where they wanted to take things. And we could attribute a lot of this to Pluto, because where Pluto left was Sagittarius. And so this would suggest that the previous, in this case, 20 plus years, so we're talking more like about closer to 25, this was transformations to our perceptions, because Sagittarius deals specifically with our view of life. And when you look at it collectively like this, you're talking about global perceptions on life, on, you know, just everything, and basically everything that's represented by media and how we view things and what the collective perspective is. So that's been changing a lot, but I think that has completely peaked out in terms of those agendas and those ways of viewing life that the Pluto was basically what I think is, I think it's all positive. I think that all that stuff that really started to ramp up there really showed society the dangers of this stuff and really woke a lot of people up to the dangers of going to such extremes with some of these perspectives, and how dangerous perspective can be really too, and how powerful things like media and the perspective being shown there. But anyways, I think that's peaked. I think that's the end of that transformation to our beliefs. Pluto will not be going back into Sagittarius now. Again, it's in Capricorn officially. I attribute a lot of those changes to that transition with Pluto.
You know, if I was just going to step back, you know, go up 1,000 miles and look back to get a broader view of everything, is it your sense, doing the work that you do, that we're going to come out in a better place? Like right now, everybody is not very happy. Most people I know are worried, fearful, because of the world events, because of the overreach, because of the open perception that somewhere in this world, there are a group of black-hearted individuals basically trying to take over everything, everywhere. And I want to just add, this had to happen, in my view. It's like the old, you got to break some eggs to make an omelet idea. And that's true. Back in the day when they were sacrificing, when we look at that now, all we see is the brutality. We can't imagine how they did it. But the idea that it is based in is a valid idea. If there's going to be more flourishing life, then death occurs. Those living things now have to disintegrate, come back, and it makes way for more life. But what's your view? And if I could pop up 10 years from now, do you get a sense that we're going to be on a more positive trajectory, or do you get a sense that we're going to be mired?
Right. So yeah, like I said before, you know, but just to recap, I think the overall trend is always promoting growth and the embetterment of life in general. But like you said, of course, these more densifying times, as I would call them, difficult times, you know, it's very synonymous with like how you need the soil and the dirt to be putting pressure on the seed in order for it to grow. And it's a requirement. And, you know, life, of course, functions this way. So with all of these challenges and difficult times, of course, it's making us stronger collectively. And I do believe that in each iteration of that, we emerge. But of course, yes, whether we're entering into a generally more supportive or difficult time in that regard, I would say that a lot of it is free will, first of all, that yes, I think it is generally a difficult time, obviously. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But whether a time is difficult or not, I think really comes to how we approach it. And I talk a lot about this with my clients. It's like for those that are going through like very difficult transits in a year, for example, you know, these are the most catalyzing and the most growth-oriented times of our lives. And what I like to sort of give the analogy of is like, if you go to the gym and you put yourself under a tremendous amount of stress by tearing your muscles and completely exhausting yourself, but you do it intentionally and you do it with awareness of what you're doing, mindfulness and intention, we wouldn't say that we're suffering, right? But if those very same acts were happening to us, let's say by an outside body or in some sort of situation where we felt like we weren't in control of that, then yes, we would say that that's a difficult time. We might even say that we're suffering. So just to point out, I think this is extremely important, is that if we go into something with intention and awareness, even the most difficult times, if we're doing it intentionally, right, growing intentionally, these are extremely constructive times. And that's where I think we're at. I think generally, yes, things are difficult, but we're becoming stronger. And I'm already seeing this. And I'm not saying they're going to become any more difficult than they already have been. If anything, probably less. I mean, there's an argument to be made that we've kind of peaked out in terms of the difficulty, actually. But anyways, regardless, the point here is, yes, generally, you know, obviously there's a lot of changes. We're seeing this astrologically. Same way you could say the late 1700s was a difficult time, but you could also say it was a fantastic time. And if you read journals and the people who lived during that time, their lives, you know, there's plenty of people there having happy, fulfilling lives. So even in the most difficult, even in the most like global, and I think we lose a lot of this like through our schools when we start learning about history and it's all about war and all this stuff. It's like even during the most difficult times, even depressions, whatever, it's really about how we live our lives. And I think we all have that individual power. And I think it's about recognizing that and working within it and using these opportunities, these times of change, which they certainly are, as positive transformations. Because at the end, yes, they are. Like I was saying, I do believe that we're on the trajectory towards embetterment for life, the whole universe, growing through each of these iterations.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would describe what I have researched and studied that we have been descending for a long time. And this matches the yuga idea from the old Vedic or the Indian ideas. And I feel like we've come around the corner. We've come by dead bottom and we're ascending now. But Jason, do you want to get anything in before I zero on the eclipse?
Of course, a lot of people are talking about the election coming up. Do we have any shenanigans that you could break down for us coming in November?
There's always shenanigans, Jason.
There are.
Isn't that the foundation for our politics?
Isn't that the election? Yeah. Right. But no, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Well, there is some very interesting things. Now, it's not a time where we're noticing any major changes. Like, for example, you guys pointing out how the springtime is. Like, I definitely agree with that. Like, from a purely astrological standpoint, it's way more active astrologically, like the springtime. But there are some interesting things that we can dissect. Like, for example, the fact that Mars is going retrograde is really interesting to me. So there's a lot of things we can cover here. But you know, two big things, I think, is that, first of all, Venus is going to be in the same position that roughly the same position that she was at during Trump's original election with Hillary. So Venus is the planet of feminine energy. So I think we're going to see some plays with that. I don't know, you know, to what extent, if it's going to be like a very similar situation to like the first election was with Hillary. But what happened was, is Venus was next to the galactic center at the end of a fucus. And from a purely like traditional astrological standpoint, this is like diminishing the planet's energy, because the Milky Way is extremely energetic and it's like drawing, it's like, it's transformative. So when a planet passes over it, it's basically going through a death and rebirth, just like the Phoenix and everything else we've talked about Scorpio and all that. So it's a death and rebirth. So it diminishes the planet's energy. So in a sense, it's like similar in the sense that that kind of feminine archetype, which Venus represents, is in more of a quote unquote diminished sort of energy at that time, but also a transformative energy and also very powerful energy, which is definitely worth noting. So anyways, that's something we can draw parallels with to make some conclusions about. And then the other thing is the Mars retrograde, which happens after. Now, retrogrades are usually a time of going back and redoing things. And with all the weirdness, shenanigans, particularly we've seen lately, there is, I would say, a strong potential for having an either a redo election or a recount or even a potential pause in regards to maybe a president taking office or things like that. Because the Mars retrograde will be post-election from December 7th all the way until February 24th. And it doesn't mean it'll necessarily be that entire time of redoing, but it is definitely interesting that that's the time of usually when a president might take office and whatnot. So Mars is the masculine archetype. So again, we can play parallels there. But those are the two very interesting things happening there. So something about similar to, what was that, 2016, I think. And this Mars now going retrograde with what we saw really close to, like recounts and redoing and, you know, all kinds of weird pauses with election we had never seen before, that energy also being in play very strongly in the December through February time period.
So let's be silly for a second and pretend that politicians are actually elected and not placed in their positions. But going with that, what do you think the respective sides would be looking at using this knowledge? Because I think we know that they will use this kind of knowledge.
Like if the elite, like, you know, this idea that the elite are using the astrology to use it for their agendas. Is that what you mean?
Right. Well, let's be silly and say that the presidential election isn't controlled. What would the Democrat side versus the Republican side be looking at to see how they could use those energies to their benefit?
Using the astrology. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think that the parties are actually aware of this. I think the higher elite, like, you know, ancient, I don't call them ancient, but like, you know, these families from like hundreds or thousands of years, you know, I think they're definitely using it. So here it's like, I would say that the astrology is being used in more of a meta perspective in the sense that they're controlling both parties. And I don't think the astrology is really being used by each party individually, but assuming that they were, yeah, I mean, I would be, I don't know. It's hard to say, but again, we see both this idea of having to redo. So if you wanted a recount, if you wanted to maybe go back and redo something from the election, that's supportive astrologically with Mars going retrograde. And with Venus, if you wanted, I don't know, the feminine archetype to be, in a sense, a kind of martyr or something like this, you could use the Venus over the galactic center on the election day. So again, it's the same thing we're seeing, like in terms of we can read it that, okay, there's a likely outcome of this kind of energy simply from the fact that we're going to be in that energy. To you can use anything we just discussed about the energy in a way that would benefit you the most. Just like the seasons, right? We could say that the springtime is a good, both the time when it's you're called to grow crops because it's warmer and you're spending more time outside, but it's also a good time to grow crops, you know, because it's the spring. So what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Is it that we're experiencing this or, and I would say yes. And I would say also it's good to use it. And if anyone wants to use the energy, then you would want to use it in the most conducive way possible. So good time for redoing, good time for reflecting, perhaps masculine energy being diminished, let's say during the December, January, February, the feminine energy being diminished around the election time. But also transformative and perhaps enriching and powerful if there can be a sort of death and rebirth with it in some way like that. You know, that would be using the energy. But again, it's really just what's available, I think, collectively at that time. And that's just two things. Of course, you could look at the lunar cycle and everything else to get a little more detail. But just in the context of those two very interesting things standing out to me, you can do that.
All right. So let's pull back around to the springtime. And we'll talk a little bit about the eclipse. So I just did a quick look up. For me here in Rhode Island, it looks like the 17th is the correct day for what I call the equinox, which is equal day and night. To paint the picture, Athen and I have a slightly different view on what causes the eclipse. Athen accepts that it's the moon. I accept that it is the nodes. But having said that, as we come into spring, to me, it's the largest energy release ever of any time, anywhere. A particularly abundant spring will release so much energy that it's not even quantifiable. And to me, that is a good way to think about what actually occurs in spring. And this is far more evident in a place like where I am, where we have a winter and it freezes. When spring comes, that energy release is a big deal. But, and I'll get Athen's point of view here, to me, and I think to most of the ancient cultures that I've researched around eclipses, an eclipse is a malefic event. It's a negative event. I learned this firsthand, which is what got me looking by sun gazing during a roughly 80% totality of eclipse, and it was chaos and uneasiness beyond description. So having said that, Athen, let's zero on an eclipse. Do you agree that an eclipse is a malefic event?
Like I've said before, you know, I think these are times of growth. But yeah, if we're going to talk about it being more challenging, yeah, absolutely. Malefic in the sense that's a difficult energy to work with, but it's a spiritual time. And so that kind of goes to the idea of like for Western cultures, Really just any culture in the world that wants to have like a more spiritual opportunity for growth during that time. I mean, that's really what it's for. But of course, that is not conducive for physical things and outer world things. So from an outer world and physical perspective, yeah, very difficult energy to work with, no doubt. But from a spiritual, it's amazing. There's lots of growth. There's awareness, deep awareness. In this case, it's a K2 lunar eclipse. So while we have, you know, obviously two eclipses each season. So here it's March 25th and April 8th, but the one on March 25th is a partial lunar eclipse. So it won't actually be visible in terms of the eclipsing, but it's close enough for us to look at it astrologically and say, okay, it's next to the nodes, like you were pointing out, astrologically, which just means that it's close to the eclipsing point, which is still very significant astrologically. But here it's a south node one on March 25th, so the K2 one. And that deals more with the past life energy, as the Hindus would say. And so it becomes very karmic. And this would be the one that the Hindus would agree that it is the most difficult, because you're having to resolve past life karma. And so it can be thought of that it's a time where past life karma comes up. And I don't mean karma, just bad stuff. I just mean this idea that if there is a kind of reincarnation, or even just in your past in this life, that things will eventually even out. And whether it's good or bad or whatever, it's just, it's coming up for a resolution, and it's coming up to be brought back into balance, whatever that might be. So yes, that's not always easy to, of course, rectify things, bring things back into balance. And there can be a lot of deep emotions, deep things, stuff in the unconscious. The lunar eclipse is an illuminating one. Okay. So this is a full moon energy. And in astrology, you know, full moons is the heightened energy of a cycle. So it's usually where we have the most both conscious and spiritual awareness. And so the lunar eclipse will likely be that. And in this case, a strong awareness of, again, our soul. Do we want to eclipse ourselves and go into our soul? Is that easy? No. But that awareness, our soul, our attachments, our yearnings, our unhealthy patterns, the things that we're, you know, need to let go of, this is all coming to the surface for us to do just that, to release ourselves, to clear that, to bring things back into balance. And just like every eclipse, I think this will be an important one in that regard. Now, it is going to be in Virgo, so it's going to be specifically about bringing back to balance the healthy qualities of Virgo. Virgo in its unhealthy form, and by the way, we've already been experiencing this for about a year, because the South Node has already been in Virgo for a little over a year now. So in Virgo, we'll suggest that what we're bringing back into balance is the healthy qualities of Virgo, but we've already been doing this for a little over a year. The unhealthy qualities of Virgo is perfectionism, control, getting into the details too much, basically getting too far into that improvement nature that Virgo represents. So again, we've already been clearing. There's probably been a lot of karma already involving this, but the eclipse is going to heighten that and help us again do that clearing so that we can have the healthy Virgo, which would be like focusing on what we do have control over, which is fundamentally ourselves, right? I mean, we've heard that a lot. So self-improvement, personal development, focusing on what we do have control over, letting go of what we don't have control over. These will all be very important themes at that time. And, you know, the transition will help us do that more healthier moving forward. So we can get into the solar eclipse, which is then, of course, in Pisces, which is the opposite to that.
Let me set it up real quick, okay? So I'm going to lay out what I think is correct and then go. So as you say, the solar eclipse will occur in Pisces. I believe Jupiter and three or four other planets are going to be visible. I think Jupiter is in Taurus, maybe it's Aries. I think Venus is in the fishes as well. And I think Mars and Saturn are both in Aquarius. Did I get any of that wrong? And so now launch, just having set the stage for everything that's going on planetarily.
So you mean during the eclipse, right? On April 8th?
Yes, during totality.
Yeah. So like you said, so a lot of planets in Pisces. So the Sun, Mercury, Venus for the fast movers. We've already had Neptune and Chiron there. Mars will be in Aquarius with Saturn, okay, and then Jupiter and Uranus and Aries, and Pluto and Cap. So like you were saying before this, before we went live, yeah. So you know, all the planets are going to be lumped in the same part of the sky, which means they'll be, you know, all visible. In this case, during the day, so it's not a time where like you would go out and see this. It's 6 months from now you can go and see it, but you know, even though it's day, of course they're still there. But anyways, all the planets being so close to each other in the same part of the sky from Capricorn to Aries, these are the four constellations right near each other. all the planets will be visible there. So in that regards, this particular part of the chart, these four constellations from Capricorn to Aries, particularly from Capricorn to Pisces. Capricorn to Pisces is the last three signs of the zodiac. And so this is like the last phases, let's say, of personal development. And Pisces, where the eclipse is and all these, most of these planets, is the last phase. And so this is where we're coming back to finding peace. And this is what it's good to do this time of the year anyways, is to connect more with our soul. And again, focus on, really in this case, let go of control and, you know, have faith in life, God, you know, whatever your perspective is. But as humans, we only have control over so much. And Pisces reminds us that there's so much more to life than even just what we're even aware of or can even control, for that matter, that, you know, life does require a sense of faith and trust and acceptance. And so these are the major themes here at this time. And anything that is about developing more of this, we could generalize it as maybe spiritual health, mental health, hygiene, you know, spiritual mental hygiene, this kind of a thing, having more peace in our life. These are going to be major themes. And in this case, yeah, major new beginnings, because this will be an actual visible solar eclipse in this regard. And like you pointed out, there's a lot of planets there already activating that side of it. Not to mention Mercury will be retrograde, which does make it a bit of a redoing process there. But just to keep it simple, yeah, that's Pisces. And this is a north node eclipse. So this is about the future path. We talked about the lunar eclipse being the past energy coming to the forefront for resolution. This is going to be about new energy developing completely. So anything new that we can bring into our life for greater peace is really the key. And we could even notice a lot of new developments, of course, starting to arise in the month of April with this, and of course, with the other collective things that we talked about.
Okay. I was actually just looking in Stellarium real quick. So there's another event, which I think I just informed you about. There is a claim by media, and I can't overstate this enough. Every comet that I have been aware of since the year 2000, if it was mentioned by media, it was pumped up to be much more than it was. And this started with Comet Ison back in the day, which, by the way, I tried to image and I couldn't. At one point, I knew where it was supposed to be. I opened up a camera shutter for like 10 minutes because you'll see the little smudge. There's nothing there. Other people claim to have imaged it. I have mixed feelings. During the full solar eclipse on April 8th, it is claimed that it is possible that a comet, along with those five major planets, will be visible naked eye. And this is debatable, as I said, because a comet could be there, but very dim. And you would need, you know, binoculars or something more to see it. It's called 12P Pons Brooks. It was named in the 1800s. The media, I think it was 1812, actually. Pons Brooks takes the names of the men who discovered it. One Pons, the other Brooks. The media has taken to calling it the Devil Comet. They claim that it flares up. Comets sometimes do. They claim that before it was visible for most of us, unless we had powerful scopes, it flared up and it blew out a chunk, leaving almost like the shape of the Millennium Falcon that they want to visualize as horns, which is why they're calling it the Devil. But not knowing much about it, Athan, if there was in fact a visible comet during totality, do you care to say anything about that?
I mean, that would be a trip. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, so much of my astrology practice is based on past observable results. You know, we've seen what Pisces is like a million times in history. So we have a good idea of that. Me describing what that would mean would be just pure speculation. You know, I don't have in my astrological arsenal anything that I can compare and say, hey, we had something like that happen similarly before and such happened, or, it, you know, this was the theme at that time. So I can't comment on that other than be a trip. So you're saying it would be like in Pisces then, right? So it would be next to the...
Yeah, I'm not sure because I just now, it could be that I need to update Stellarium. I haven't opened it for a while, but typically someone adds the comets and things into Stellarium. I just did a search for 12P Pons Brook, Devil Comet, Comet. Nothing was there. So I'm not sure about the location, but I think it should be up to the left. So in the vicinity of Jupiter, I'm guessing, though I'm completely guessing, but I appreciate you begging off. All I can say is the entirety of history that I have researched, a comet is always considered a harbinger of negative events. The last one that I came across was from Tycho Brahe. It is my thoughts that what Tycho actually said is partially hidden. I think Tycho made an estimate about how far the comet was, which would have been a massive deal if I'm correct. But he noted the comet and then said something to the effect we should look for the negative events, which he predicted 3 months from now. That's really all I know, other than everybody agrees they're malefic. But to pull it back around to things we do know about Athens, I have been describing the sun as a lens. That's how I view it. And a good example of this is when you take a prism and you bust out the white sunlight into the color spectrums. So basically, it's even lensing the colors in. So the way I view it is that all those energies from the luminaries kind of lens into us, and the sun plays a key role. That's how I view it. Now, during an eclipse, that lens is going to be blocked for a short period of time. Do you want to add any of that? And by the way, do you think the way that I view the sun is helpful as a lens?
No, it's very interesting. So yeah, that could definitely be the case. But I think either way, I think we're kind of on the same page then, right? Because I mean, you view it as there is something in front of that lens then that's causing the eclipse.
Yes. Yeah.
So either way, like from an astrological standpoint, I mean, it's the same symbolism. You know, you've got the sun, which represents outer consciousness, and that's being eclipsed by something else, whether it's the moon or whatever else. And so that's the same interpretation. It's that it's a time where the outer world, the conscious self, the ego basically becomes dimmed. Okay. And that's why, you know, another reason why, you know, it's given the malefic, you know, interpretation, in the sense that it's drowning out something that is in many ways what we identify the most with. I mean, I know we are so much more than our egos, and we're so much more than our conscious self, like our unconscious and our spiritual selves and everything else. But when you are talking about things from a very, like just this physical world reality, you know, it is an ego-based world. It's more of a conscious physical world. Yeah. So that's getting eclipsed. That gets dimmed. Things there get blocked or diminished, however you see that. Now, in order to reconnect with the yin side of life, which would be the spiritual, in my opinion, or the unconscious, depending on your view there, but it is a time to diminish the ego, a type of ego death, if you will, in order to reconnect with the spiritual self. And I think that's fundamentally what's happening during all of the eclipses, but especially the ones in Pisces like this, because Pisces, like I said, it's the last sign of the zodiac. And it's where you do come full circle back around to the beginning, which means it is the ending. It is the death. I'm not saying Pisces is about death, but I'm saying that it's the ending of a cycle. And so it's the ending. In this case, Pisces is about letting go. It's about surrender. It's about, like I said, faith, trust. It's supposed to be diminishing energy. So I think that particular way of looking at it is going to be a particularly strong theme, let's say. And this eclipse, as well as the other ones we're going to have. So we're not done yet. You know, we still have all the eclipses in Pisces for the most part for still the next year, 12 months, really. So,
right. To illustrate what Athan just said, if you line up the zodiacal ideas on the human body, Pisces is the feet, the following sign Aries would be the head. So that puts another spin on it. But Athan, can you describe the nodes a little bit? So it is my point of view that it is a node that is blocking the sun. And so for Athan to accept that it is the moon is maybe more common sense, to be honest with you, because the nodes seem to be an imaginary point in space. Can you just describe to people what the nodes are, Athan?
Yeah. So the way that I see the nodes and the way that it is commonly worked with in you know, astrology, is that they are the intersecting paths of the sun and moon. Right. So you have the path of the sun, which is the ecliptic, and then you have the lunar path. And that intersecting point, it's not a visible thing. It's just a mathematical point in the sky. If you were to draw a line for the ecliptic in the sky, and if you were to draw a line of the path of the moon's path in the sky, where those cross are the eclipses. And so where the moon's path rises above, celestial north, let's say, what they call celestial north. So rises above the ecliptic, that's the north node. And where the moon's path dips below the ecliptic, that's what they call the south node. But they're just theoretical points. They're not actually a thing, at least, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. So you see the problem. I wanted to make it perfectly clear that when I am making the claim that it is a node doing it, why a lot of people are going to tell me, you know, I'm not accepting that. You're wrong. Basically, the imaginary line called the ecliptic is coming across the lunar orbital plane. And to be fair, to be open and honest, every solar eclipse, the moon will be very, very close. But by definition, that would be a new moon, right, Athan?
Right. So if we have a solar eclipse, it's a new moon. So not all new moons are solar eclipses, of course, because you can have new moons where the sun and moon are in alignment, but not what I'm calling intersecting. So they're in alignment. They're in the same part of the, like, they're not overlapping each other, but they are in the same constellation, let's say, right on top and below of each other. Though that's every new moon. When the sun and moon are next to each other, it's a new moon. But when that new moon happens, when the sun and moon are next to each other, next to the nodes, i.e. on the intersecting paths, then that's when we have an eclipse. And so for solar eclipses, it's new moons. And for lunar eclipse, it's full moons.
So this is why the predictions I made are so difficult to prove. He informed you, as did the Tibetans. The Tibetans have a saying that says the closer the moon gets to the sun, the darker it gets. So he basically just told you to have a new moon. It's in very close proximity to the sun. I have made the prediction that at new, where you can't see it, it's blacked out basically, or however you would describe that. I have made the prediction that at new and at very young, so that first day or two, maybe it's only hours, I don't know, where there's just that first sliver of light, I have predicted that the disk of the moon will be see-through. I have further predicted that they call it new for a good reason, because you are not looking at the same old thing, which is why they call it new. And these, for most people, these things I have said are too far, but I do not accept the moon eclipses it. I spent years trying to simply image a thing that is supposedly roughly a quarter of a million miles away being backlit by the brightest thing we know at 93 million, and it can't be done. And that's when I began to realize there's a problem here. But to be fair, this is why we need to talk, because what Athan accepts as true is far more common sense than, you know, if you were just going to logically work it out. Because you can see a moon, you know the moon's there, it's right there in the vicinity. So I just want to make that clear, because I'm claiming that a supposed imaginary point in space is doing the eclipsing. So anyhow, what's next? I think we have a lot of conjunctions this year, don't we?
Well, the Uranus-Jupiter one, like I said, is a big one. But the other ones are quite cyclical, you know, so that's going to be involving the fast-moving planets, which, you know, for the most part, do this every year. The fact that Mars is next to the fast movers has been adding a lot more conjunctions in general. But in terms of a yearly energy, I would say, yeah, it's mainly that Uranus-Jupiter conjunction.
Athan, do you think there's anything up with this eclipse that not-so-nice people might use to their advantage?
Right. So, man, I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole with what some people probably do during eclipses. But again, so with Pisces, let's say with the solar eclipse on April 8th, which is the you know, more stronger one, I would argue, because it's, again, closer to the nodes, you know, probably, again, Pisces would be, you know, you'd be using this, you know, in a kind of deceitful way. So Pisces is, again, blurring the lines. So ideally, it's like you blur the lines intentionally, right? You kill the ego intentionally so that you can connect more with your soul. But if you were trying to use this in a way to maybe manipulate others and move forward your agenda, especially if it's in conflict with others' natural agendas, you would use deception a lot. You would really invoke a lot of confusion, because it's the time, you know, we're all going to be way more susceptible to confusion in general. You would also use it as a very idealistic time, because it's the same thing. So the conscious mind is dimmed, or, you know, it's under more of the influence, as you might say. It's like a Pisces is like, you know, it rules the drugs, you know, so it's like being under the influence. So you're under the influence, you have this, you know, let's say society, you're going to try to put them under the influence, maybe put them in a comatose, maybe kind of be a great time for brainwashing, you know? So basically anything that's going to diminish conscious awareness, and then whatever you want to introduce into that would be an ideal time for it. So it's arguable that, you know, these Pisces times are the best time to just do anything that's forwarding someone's agenda, and the, you know, if it conflicts with others' agendas. And so, yeah, I would, during this eclipse, again, it's all about mindfulness. I would say it's a great time to use this for personal spiritual development. Yes, as always, but maybe particularly during this time, be aware of whatever does come out during this time, in the sense of it perhaps being with the sole intention of confusing, diminishing understanding of things, and possibly even interjecting some falsities. And by the way, also, what you call idealistic. Okay, so this is a great time if you wanted to make someone very idealistic, have society put on a bunch of rose-colored glasses, which would be a great time for that. So again, we can speculate in terms of that, but I would say generally, because like Crow pointed out, there's so many planets in Pisces, we've got this eclipse in Pisces, this, you know, in this season of the eclipses, this 18-year cycle right now, you know, last year, this year is very much eclipses in Pisces. And the fact that, of course, we have fast movers there like Neptune and Chiron, and Mercury's retrograde there. So yeah, there's a lot going on in Pisces. And that's just a general look at perhaps how you might be able to use that, I suppose. But I mean, it goes without saying that you would always kind of want to do that. But now is, like, I would argue probably, now that I'm thinking about it, one of the best times I've seen if you're going to try to deceive or have others put on some rose-colored glasses or anything of that nature.
What is the Mercury period? Is it 88 days to go around the sun? Is that right? Do you know?
Oh, to go around the sun? Yeah, well, what is it? So it's, you know, it's three times a year. So you're dealing with, I mean, it should be I can't say exactly, but it, you know, it should be closer to 120, because it's pretty close to that three times a year. But that's, of course, thinking of it from the orbital perspective. If you were just looking it up at the sky, this is just the cycle of how many times Mercury goes back and forth across the sun, you know, from our vantage point.
So I left that out of my description and you didn't. Mercury being in Pisces, and there's been a few times when people have filmed solar eclipses and Mercury has been in transit, which I can't tell you what a big deal that would be for me, but we're getting low on the hour, Athan. Are there anything that stand out as important that you would mention about the remainder of the year that, I don't know, affect social things that people care about that just kind of stand out as some of the biggest energies?
Yeah. So like I said, this Uranus Jupiter is a big one for me. So has been the Pluto coming in to start to restructure those. And I think it has been more quiet than I was anticipating, because technically since February, Pluto has gotten closer to Capricorn than Sag. Pluto's not officially in the actual constellation yet, but I still think it's going to be a big year for, again, starting these transformations societally, you know, like I was saying before, paralleling 1776, late 1700s. But the Uranus and Jupiter in going into Taurus is, I think, very significant. So this is, you know, really from the financial side of things. And so I think you could very well classify this year, and in many ways of the next 10 years starting now, but whenever this starts to unfold, which April 20th is when they can join, but I think it's really going to be in May when we have the actual lunar cycle starting there, activating those planets. So that's going to be the lunar cycle starting May 8th. But anyways, this springtime, I am expecting, you know, a lot of shenanigans, but a lot of things involving the financial sector. You know, we've already kind of seen it, actually. I was saying how it's probably going to be expanding. And again, this isn't financial advice or anything, so please no one take this and start making trades based on this or anything like that. But, you know, I think it's Jupiter is the bull, as you pointed out, and traditionally rules commodities and more of the physical, tangible assets, such as gold, silver. And I would argue, and probably going to spark a big debate maybe here in your community, but you know, I would argue also Bitcoin and crypto that actually are self-governing like that, where they're not being inflated and manipulated, but where it's already pre-programmed, basically. Limited supply kind of stuff. So So Jupiter going in there can really expand it. And Uranus now coming into here is really going to innovate it. So I'm expecting a lot of financial innovation. I think everything we've seen with crypto is just a kind of prelude to this year and next year, basically, because I think, and we're already seeing this, and I've been talking about this a lot already, but central bank digital currencies and more of the mainstream adoption of using blockchain is really going to be part of this new cycle. And so we'll see what new comes out of this in the spring. I do think it'll be that soon. It's a bit quiet right now, which always gives me a little bit of a calm before the storm feeling as it tends to go that way. So we'll see in terms of what news coming out of this. But yeah, I think it's a time where there's going to start to be a lot of financial ups and downs, let's say, things to be mindful of, potential, I think, as I've been saying, more and more inflation, even though they claim that that's under control, whatever the heck they're talking about. You know, more of that inflationary kind of energy. And then in this case, using technology to start to change the financial system itself. And I think what we start to see rolled out here as early as April, May is going to be a big indication of what will continue to be implemented over the next 10 years, while particularly Uranus is still here in Taurus.
Well, it is my assertion that if the powers that be get their digital money as the main form of buying and selling, we will be slaved out for some period of time. But here's the thing. Actually, I'm sure, I think it's, do you remember, Jason, is J.P. Morgan? He was supposedly, I think it's J.P. Morgan, is one of those guys. They claimed, he stated this, millionaires don't use astrologers, billionaires do.
Yeah.
But then remember what I said earlier. How is it that if you go back in time, one of the words that represented wealth at the highest levels was bullion? That is simply the bull and the lion brought together. Why would it be? Well, I think it's self-evident, right? What Athens does for a living and what we're talking about here used to have huge sway. And from my point of view, Athens always has had huge sway on the most powerful organizations in this world. And I think you kind of proved that in a way when I remember you nailed, I think it was December 14, if I remember correctly, you nailed the day that the vaccine shots actually came available to the day. People remember that. But we're at 50 minutes. Jason, anything you want to squeeze in here? We just wanted to do a quick catch up with Athens to reiterate some of the ideas for this year. And I think the election thing alone, I've already had the feeling that something different is going to be about this election. But Jason, is there anything else you want to get in?
So is there anything in 2025 that might indicate how things might go with the elections or anything like that? Like, do we see any kind of upheaval or energy shift for next year that might be good and or bad for us?
I haven't taken a deep dive into 2025 yet. I'm looking at it now. Like I said, this year was definitely the most significant. I mean, I've been talking about 2024, you know, since, since I started this whole thing, really. It's been really popping out from like a multi-year, even, you know, kind of decade perspective. Next year, it looks like, you know, again, a continuation of what's starting this year. And that's why I've been talking so much about 2024 in terms of new cycles starting. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, decade things shifting in, you know, around 2024. And I'm sure a lot of this can bleed into next year. But I think it's really, you know, everything I talked about there is about the new beginnings for, you know, a long time, 10 years at the minimum, 20 years in some cases, like with Pluto, in terms of these new shifts that are happening. So I think next year, 2025, will be more of a continuation and certainly more developments, but in the areas that we were talking about here today.
All right, guys. Well, it's got to be an interesting year. I think everybody knows it. I think we expect change, and I'll just go on the record. Let's each one of us, let's give our point of view without any of us being clairvoyant. What maybe 10 years from now, will we be in a terrible place? Will we be in a better place? It is my point of view that this kind of overreach at this level is going to cause a lot of misery. I think things like the vaccine have caused a lot of death. I think that there's going to be a lot more death. I think that there's going to be a lot fewer people. But at the same time, this occurred mostly based on the choices that were put before us. It is my expectation that we are now in an upward trending cycle. And as time goes on, we're going to be entering a really, truly amazing world, not just from our capabilities, but how we treat one another and these kinds of things. So I'll give it to you, Athan. What's your feeling about where we could possibly be in 10 years? Do you feel like it'll be dire straits or something better?
No, I'm in the same camp as you, that we've reached a low point already. As far as I'm concerned, it's only up from here. Now, I will say again, because I'm so free will oriented, that I think with this Taurus, this side of Taurus that I didn't mention, because this is the next 10 years, is becoming more self-reliant and more community oriented. So I think that probably the best thing we can do with humanity, especially with, again, these systems and structures that I think are going to start to really, you know, and I'm not trying to say this in a fear sense, but crumble. And all I mean by that is that when Pluto goes into Capricorn like this, we have all these old and outworn systems. And I think everyone would agree there. So all the old and outward systems are going to be crumbling. And, you know, I don't want people to be hanging onto them like a sinking ship. Okay. And there's alternatives. Okay. There's alternatives. And so one of them could be financial independence, kind of the stuff we were alluding to earlier. Another one's just being more self-reliant in general, getting more into nature, growing your own food. And then the other one's community. You know, I'm seeing already a lot of innovation with community, and that's going to be a big one over the next 20 years. There's already these communities forming in actual, in a way, like not only neighborhoods, but like small towns forming around central ideas like privacy and things like this. So I'm expecting a lot of this self-reliance community coming out of this. And I think that's the lifeboat. So that's the path for me. That's what I think, and where I'm moving into, or trying to, I should say, it's not easy, but I'm trying to loosen myself into the attachment, into the dependency really to these systems as much as I can. And I think that's probably the reason I'm doing it is because I think that's the thing that's most important during these next 10 years.
So Jason, what do you say? They're going to get their digital money and slave us out for a couple decades, or what's your view?
I think they're going to try to go for it, but it's going to meet too much resistance.
So 10 years from now, are we in a better spot, or are we still trying to dig out from under the mess?
I say better.
One thing I've noticed, and I think what actually did it, and I talked a little bit about it, is sacrifices. For the longest time, I couldn't wrap my head around. It just seemed, when I was younger, it's just cruel, man. Why? Why? And then I began to realize. And then when human sacrifice was put in narrative, some of which I didn't accept at all, but I knew that it had probably happened in our world. And I knew that there were probably times when that was going on. And then I read accounts where the people volunteered to be sacrificed. And I began to realize that there's a completely different spiritual state where death doesn't matter an iota. I think to some degree, there have been Buddhists and other, mostly Eastern, even in Christianity religions, where death just didn't matter. It was just part of what we're doing here. But I began to realize that the biggest, most positive changes we ever see are almost always preceded by calamity. And I think most of us can agree that what's been going on here, there's been a lot of calamity. The problem that I've wrestled with is the way that I view my lifetime, born in 1963, almost perfectly mirrors the world takeover, because JFK happened a month before I was born. JFK is the kickoff to, we're going to do crazy crap in the news, on the world stage, to start driving us in the direction we want. And it's all hidden. Manson was that. The moon landing was that. There are endless examples. Sandy Hoax, the Boston, I mean, on and on it goes, up to 9/11. It is my view at 9/11, they felt that they were so big and powerful, no one could stop them. So they started doing stuff in the light of day. That was extended in 2020 and actually exacerbated because they convinced so many people to participate in their attack. And so when I look at the stretches of time, that's 20 years. That's from great conjunction to great conjunction. That's a generation. From 9/11 to 2020. And I began to think, holy crap, are we going to be doing this in 20 years? And that's why I've come to the reckoning that I think the overreach has been extreme. I think that we are just about to break through. But Athan, We're pretty much there. Can you tell folks what you do, the services you provide, and where they can find you?
Yeah, so I'm at masteringthezodiac.com. You can just type that into the search engine or just in the browser, masteringthezodiac.com. All the resources are there. So what I recommend everyone do for the first time, even if you're not into astrology, is just go and type in your birth details. You'll see the sky exactly the way it was when you were born. And by the way, I do have an actual visual, what they call planetarium, but it's just the sky view there as well now. So you type in your birth details, you will see exactly where all the planets or luminaries were in the sky when you were born. Check that out. And then if you want to go further, there's interpretations on what that might mean. It's not that the planets are doing anything. It's just that there's a theme, a cycle that we're in. And when the planets are in this cycle, then that energy is exhibited. So, but check out the descriptions. And if that resonates, then check out more. I have courses there, I have readings. Those reports are still there. Yeah, everyone still gets a 50% discount. If you want the full report, you can go to Crow's website for that. That's masteringthezodiac.com/ I think we did Crow 777. Yep, Crow 777. So yeah, all the resources are there. Check it out, but just start by looking at the sky when you were born. See it visually, at least through the software. Ideally, go outside and look, but it's all there on the website. And yeah, go from there and see how it fits for you.
Okay, there it is. Mastering the Zodiac on the sponsored page. It's on the fifth row down, all the way to the right. It's actually the one image that is slightly rectangular, and there's a 50% discount. Is that still valid? That's right.
Yeah, it's still valid. But I did get quite a few people confusing that with a coupon code. So that's not a coupon code. That's the actual URL. So you will have to just, go to masteringthezodiac.com/crow777. That's what it says there, right, Crow? Crow777?
Yes. It's all lowercase, CRROW777. By the way, I've had numbers of emails of people that you've worked with that were quite happy.
Yeah. Tons of people from your community. Yeah, we definitely have that similarity for sure.
As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure, actually, I know Athan did, I just asked him to do a cursory observation on my birth time. That's posted in the forum somewhere, so people could get an idea. Remember when you did that, Athan? It's not a full-blown reading. It's like a cursory overview, I would say.
The overview, yeah. But I did send you your full report, didn't I? It's like 20 pages. I did send you, or 12 pages. I did send you
that. I don't think so.
No? I thought I sent it to you, Jason and Rose.
You definitely did for us. Thank you.
Oh, you got it. Okay. I'll just send yours again, Crow.
Okay.
I may not have sent it, but if not, I'll send it to you. Okay. Or I'll forward it either way. Yeah.
That'd be great. It's pot. There's times when I get so many emails, I just get swamped. And if Rose doesn't keep my head above water, you can ask Jason. I just give up and go do something else.
Me too, man. I mean, it's crazy how many emails. Yeah, for sure.
I sit down, glaze over, and I said, I wonder what my telescope's doing. And I wander off. All right. Well, thank you so much for catching up, Athan. Jason, anything else you want to get in?
No, sounds like we got some interesting times coming up, though.
I think there's little doubt. And I want to say a thing about some of the oldest teachings in the world. There are a few things that I guide my life by. And one of those things has been reiterated from supposedly ancient times. Mind precedes all. And if you listen to Athan and what he said today, he's basically leveraging off that idea. You can be having a terrible time, and yet some people are making the most of it. Well, what's doing that? Well, it's the way they're approaching it. It's the way they're thinking about it. And to me, the entirety of what I just call a world takeover, because I think people know what I'm talking about, it's based on lies and fear. And the funny thing about fear, if you logically look at it, it doesn't exist. Fear does not exist until you create it. And recently, I saw one of those near-death people, and it was interesting because he said, and they showed me the world, and there were these rainbow rings around the world, and each one was a belief system. And the people who took over our world told me that it doesn't matter what you believe. If you're caught in one of those belief systems, we have you. And I thought that is a helpful idea. That is a helpful, helpful idea. But with that, we're going to wrap up. Thank you so much, Athan. Folks, do not forget, if you want Athan's service on the support page, there is a link with a code that gets you 50% off, which is one hell of a discount. And I have many, many emails from happy people. But I would wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. And there it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing. Come!